Hey, podcast community, Dr. Mark here. I'm so excited to offer you a 7-day free trial of my revolutionary new platform called Dr. Hyman Plus. For 7 days, you get special access to all the private content included in Dr. Hyman Plus entirely free. It's so easy to sign up. Just go to Apple Podcast on your phone and click Try Free button on the Doctor's Pharmacy Podcast. You'll get exclusive access to ad-free Doctor's Pharmacy podcast episodes and functional medicine deep dives where a practitioner dives into topics like heart health, muscle health, insulin resistance, and more to help you understand the root cause of specific ailments and walks you through the steps to improve your health today. You'll also get access to all my Ask Mark Anything Q&As where I answer the community's biggest health and wellness questions. Because I'm so sure you're going to love this platform, I'm offering you free access to all of this content for 7 days and a teaser of my brand new functional medicine deep dive episode diving deep into one of the most important topics in health. Head on over to the Doctor's Pharmacy Podcast on Apple Podcast and sign up for your free trial right now. Okay, here we go.
Hello, this is Dr. Chris D'Adamo from the University of Maryland School of Medicine, Center for Integrative Medicine, and the Institute for Functional Medicine, where I serve as a senior research advisor. And excited to talk about this topic of nutrition and optimal aging. As you can see in the title, this is geared to be something that you can indeed master. It's very practical. I will go deep with the science and underlying mechanisms of how I think you can optimize aging through nutrition. But ultimately, this is going to come down to tools and strategies and perspectives that you can utilize in your own lives. And everybody's got a slightly different take on this subject. But I think you'll find this encouraging in that there is much that you can do. And I'm going to go ahead and minimize my picture here so we can better see the screen. So just to give a little bit of an overview of where we're going to go with this. So we'll start just on how I came into this topic and then get into this really useful, I'd say, construct of the hallmarks of aging. And we'll even look at the hallmarks of health more generally that I think you'll find helpful when you think about your everyday lifestyles, exposures, and so on, and what you might be able to do about that. Then we'll just, to make sure everybody's on the same page, give an overview on what we mean by nutrients, because I'm going to be talking quite a bit about how nutrient demands change with aging, which is the next sort of area of focus, you know, due to both physiological reasons, but also a wide variety of other factors, you know, lifestyles, social lives, medications are big. We'll talk about that. Get into another theory, the triage theory from Bruce Ames that some of you may have heard about. And then look at tying it back to those hallmarks of aging and what are some specific foods and nutrients that can help out in that respect. All right. And then really, I got to dive deep on a few key areas, the first of which is protein and some of the controversy in that area that I hope to provide some clarity on. Then look at a bunch of other nutrients whose demands change with age for a variety of reasons. And then those that are sort of on the cutting edge, in particular, we're going to look at creatine and NAD plus precursors, which I think are really exciting, and then kind of tie it all together. All right, so how did I come to this topic? Well, I did my doctoral work on hip fracture patients and looking at how nutritional factors influenced their recovery. So I looked at vitamin E, the carotenoids, and antioxidant nutrients, and how basically those that were more replete in these nutrients, those that had levels that were higher than others, tended to fare better. They had less inflammation. They recovered more quickly. They had better physical function. And I think this is really interesting, but this is kind of the medical reactionary model. You know, once somebody has had some kind of illness or chronic injury or so on. And that's important. But what I have found to be more important as time has gone along is actually gone back to my roots. So these are some pictures of my grandfather, lived to be over 100 years of age. It's a picture of him on the left where he was a Fortune 500 CEO. So lived a really fast-paced lifestyle, really busy, with his work and family and so on. But he was a real believer in lifestyle. So nutrition and physical activity and so on. That picture in the middle, he's probably 95. And the one on the right, he's playing basketball at 98. So I was influenced by this alongside, you know, what I'd done with people who, you know, were maybe not functioning as well with advanced age. And, you know, I've always found the super centenarians to be of great interest. The paper that you see on the left is those that are over 113 years of age. There's many of them. This paper focused on those that were very well documented with birth records and so on. You know, we know that the longest, you know, lived person was a 122-year-old woman who actually was not particularly, I would say most of us say, had the most healthy lifestyle. Also, maybe not the most functional. Now, granted, 122, what do you expect? But I think what has motivated me the most is probably the images on the right of those who are highly functioning and thriving, you know, deep into life. And we're going to look at factors that should help you, you know, reach that to the best of your circumstances. And these are the papers that I mentioned earlier. They're quite interesting. The hallmarks of aging. There was a 2013 original version of this, and this was expanded in 2023. Dr. Hyman has spoken of these at some length, and we're going to get into to the details on each of the different hallmarks of aging and specific foods and nutrients you can utilize to capitalize on them. But you see them here, they're grouped into different categories of primary, antagonistic, and integrative. Primary is kind of the furthest upstream, and the integrative ones are the furthest downstream, though very important, certainly. And we're going to look at each of these in detail, define what they are, and define some foods and nutrients, and more generally nutritional approaches that may help you, you know, optimize these different domains of aging. And, you know, this has also been looked at across the lifespan. So the same group had another very interesting paper when looked at the hallmarks of health, and actually some fair amount of overlap here. We'll see, you know, one of the areas that I've really taken an interest in is circadian biology. So you see the rhythmic oscillations tapping into that. And when we talk a little bit about time-restricted eating today, that would be one area, though, that clearly applies to light exposure and other domains that we can really utilize to our advantage. But to just frame this topic to make sure we're all on the same page, you know, when we talk about nutrients, there's two main classes. There are the macronutrients, protein, carbohydrate, and fat that provide energy for the body, which is most often measured in calories, right? Then you've got just thousands of micronutrients. You get your vitamins and minerals, which we'll talk about. And then you get, you know, non-essential micronutrients that, while all of these don't provide energy for the body, they're equally as important. They are needed for survival, the vitamins and minerals. And, you know, there's probably others that we just don't know about yet. I'm going to talk about these today. But first, to get into the macronutrients, we have protein. And this is an absolute key for aging. Lots of different sources. There are two main types here. There are your complete proteins, which just mean they contain all nine of the essential amino acids. And those are amino acids that our bodies can't produce endogenously. All right. Now, most animal proteins are complete. Not all of them. Things like collagen, for example, which is very popular and quite useful. We'll talk a little bit about that today, but that's another one that I think is quite useful for aging when it comes to joint and skin health and so on. But it is missing some of the essential amino acids. So you wouldn't want it as a primary protein source. Then you have your incomplete proteins, which don't contain all nine of the essential amino acids. So it's missing at least one. And most plant proteins actually are incomplete, though they can be combined to form a complete protein. So most cultures had this figured out when you look at things like rice and beans, for example, where you know, one's missing lysine, the other's missing arginine, you can combine them. So it's probably not as efficient of a way to do it as for animal protein, but it is certainly a way to do it. And there's a number of good plant-based proteins, powders on the market today. These are broken down by protease enzymes. You can take those as supplements. As time goes on with age, one of the reasons that our nutrient demands increase is that our digestive enzymes from the pancreas are not as abundant or effective. And these have 4 calories per gram. And you have carbohydrates, a wide variety of these. These are probably some of the healthier sources pictured here. No essential carbohydrates. Where there's the ketogenic diet and approaches that you can survive and in some cases thrive without carbohydrates. Most people do well by having them in the diet, but in any case, there's multiple types. There's sugars, which can be either simple or complex, starches, which are complex. And it's an oversimplification to say simple, good or bad, complex, good or bad. We really want to think about the nutrients that are accompanying the carbohydrate, not necessarily whether they're simple or complex. Then you have fibers, which are different. So these are non-starches, polysaccharides, and you have soluble and insoluble. Soluble fibers are things like inulin and so on that feed your gut bacteria. They can cause GI distress in people, but insoluble are those that pass through you, things like psyllium and so on. And these are broken down to glucose, with the exception of fiber, which is not, by amylase enzymes. And that's actually, it starts in our mouths, in our saliva. Last of the macronutrients are fat. Many different sources of these. There are 2 essential fatty acids. One's an omega-3 and one's an omega-6. Most people get more omega-6 than they need and probably not as much omega-3 as they would benefit from. There are multiple different types that are distinguished by their carbon bond structure. So you get saturated fats, which, for many years had been sort of demonized as, harmful to health. But as more evidence has emerged, it's not that simple. Some saturated fats can be harmful. Others can be health promoting. So again, you want to get them in a whole food source that's got nutrients and just trying to, avoid the processed forms, ultra-processed foods in general. Monounsaturated fats have a 1 carbon-carbon double bond. So some examples of this would be there's quite a bit of monounsaturated fat in olive oil and macadamia nuts. And polyunsaturated fats have multiple carbon-carbon double bonds. So these are things like cold water fish, sardines, salmon, and so on. Nuts. So linoleic acid is one that's become kind of controversial. Recently, that is a form of polyunsaturated fat that some believe we get too much of. But in any case, these are broken down by lipase enzymes, and these contain 9 calories per gram. So they're more calorically dense than carbohydrate and fat, which is one of the things that gave rise to the low-fat diets, which probably weren't the best advice. Fat is health promoting when you've got healthy fats. Certain fats, you want to avoid. Trans fats, hydrogenated oils, and so on. But, when we're talking about a prominent whole food diet, fat can be quite helpful and essential. So speaking of things that are essential, we have our vitamins. So these are micronutrients. So we're moving over into the non-calorie-containing, non-energy-containing nutrients. So there's 13 of them that are carbon-containing and are essential to health. You see them listed there. We don't produce these endogenously. So we have to get them through the diet. And one example that I'd like to dial in on a little bit is vitamin K. So K actually stood for the German coagulation. So it allows blood to coagulate normally. And that's when we think of, vitamin K1, think of leafy greens and so on. So if someone's getting surgery, they advise you not to consume many of these because they have anticoagulant effects. But what about vitamin K2? I'll let you pause here and think of some sources of this. So not as common in the diet. So things like natto, which is the Japanese fermented soy, Gouda cheese. Basically, K2 is the product of bacterial fermentation. So this is really important for heart health, and also works together with vitamin D and magnesium to get calcium into the bones and out of the circulation. So This is also very important. Moving on to minerals, these are non-carbon containing compounds that are also essential to health. You have your macro and trace. You see them all listed here. You need more of the macro than you do trace. Once again, these have to be obtained through the diet. And calcium is, a mineral that we hear quite a bit about. We typically think about it for bone formation, but it's involved in so many other things. Dairy, and if you're going to get dairy, you like to get it grass-fed and maybe even better fermented. It's probably the greatest source. You do get it in other sources like sardines when there's the bones there, and some leafy greens. Though interestingly, with the leafy greens, you have oxalates that impair calcium absorption. So just something to think about if you're osteoporotic or osteopenic, just to make sure that you're getting enough calcium on your diet. It'd be ideally with calcium and vitamin D supplement, maybe even more ideal, some K2 in there. All right, so you've heard about the vitamins and minerals. We're going to talk about these as they pertain to aging. Now let's look at some of the non-essential micronutrients that offer lots of health benefits. So carotenoids, these are, there's hundreds of these colorful pigments that are in, lots of different fruits and vegetables. They're in salmon. That's what gives, a nice wild caught salmon the deep red color. But, you see them in the alpha and beta carotene in your orange colored, pumpkin and carrots and so on, lycopene in your red colors, lutein, zeaxanthin in your leafy greens and egg yolks on a pasture raised eggs, typically. Then you get flavonoids and polyphenols, and a lot of these health promoting foods that you see here, things like resveratrol, curcumin, EDCG in green tea, anthocyanidins that are in berries. Okay, these actually have helpful prebiotic properties and can help manage inflammation, and they have epigenetic effects. They seem to really benefit human health in a variety of ways. And all these were plant foods that you see pictured in, but there are many helpful micronutrients in animal foods, choline and egg yolks. It's also in beets, but this is really important with age when it comes to cognitive function. We'll talk about that later as we go along. Then we have, historically maligned, though the climate seems to be changing that a little bit. Red meat, where I think we need to think about that in a little more nuanced way. If you look at pasture-raised, regenerative, ideally sourced red meat's a great source of creatine, which is, I'll talk quite a bit about that today, and carnitine. We're going to talk about Bruce Ames's papers with how important carnitine is in the triage theory of aging, and coenzyme Q10, especially important if you're taking a statin. And I'm going to talk about a resource for medication depletions, but these are all really good sources too. And if you happen to be on a plant-based diet, you ought to think about supplementing with these because they're really important for health and aging. And just briefly, I'm going to talk about the nutritional reference values, because when we talk about optimal aging, we need to think well beyond the alphabet soup of what you see. And, things like the recommended dietary allowances or the RDAs, this is what you see on the food labels. What you may not know is that this is, the amount that's sufficient to meet nutrient requirements to prevent nutrient deficiency diseases. So things like rickets and scurvy, not chronic disease. And this varies by a variety of factors, gender and life stages, certain pregnancy and age. And you get tolerable upper intake level. So these are really conservative, especially if you look at things like vitamin D. What we ought to be getting is considerably higher a lot of times, certainly than the RDA for optimal health. But they are worthwhile to keep in mind that you can get too much of a good thing when it comes to nutrients. But there has been a lot of, discussion and evidence that for many years now that these RDAs are too low when it comes to preventing chronic disease. All right, so these are the RDAs. And, we see how they actually vary by life stage. And then we see the pregnant and lactating women. We see throughout children into older adults and so on. We see that these needs differ, and that kind of makes sense. But there's only one food label. So to keep this in mind, that the can just emphasize the RDA is can help you prevent nutrient deficiency diseases. But for those of you interested in optimizing you know, your health span and aging so the best you can. You might need to think a little bit more broadly than this. And the labels, food labels, just so you know, these are based on recommendations for young adult women on a 2000 calorie diet. So nutrition is not one size fits all. We know that needs vary between people based on all kinds of factors, how active they are, whether they're smoking or not, or, you know, with their gender, weight, all these kinds of things. And we also know that within individuals, by stage of life, that these vary. And this also applies to you know, the obvious things like age and pregnancy, but, you know, vitamin C, you know, you take enough of it, you get to bile tolerance, you have diarrhea. That level is very different when someone has a cold and when they don't. So even common things like the common cold, our nutrient needs vary quite a bit with that. And this is really important to older adults who have wide differences in their comorbidities and their health. So why is this? So why, with this framework in mind, which I hope you find helpful beyond just aging, but it is going to be useful for this talk, but why do our nutrient demands increase with aging? And there are a wide variety of reasons why. You see them listed here, some of them. There's even more beyond this, but some nice you know, sort of acronyms, Meals on Wheels and Determine. So just to go through this, things to think about, you know, like medication usage, polypharmacy, that really changes our nutrient levels and can increase them in many cases. You know, issues with swallowing or chewing and so on that can happen. These physiological things, economic issues, you know, challenges shopping, you know, a wide variety of things that you see listed here. Social contact that became especially challenged during COVID. So there's a bunch of reasons here. It's not just that we are producing less stomach acid or our digestive enzymes aren't working as well. There's a lot of life and social situations that influence why our nutrient demands change with age. That said, there are indeed some you know, very physiological reasons why this paper gets into some of those, the factors in aging that affect the bioavailability of nutrients. I mentioned some of these. So some of them are, we just don't absorb as well the nutrients in the small intestine. We don't secrete as much pancreatic enzymes. You know, those ones that I mentioned when I talked about the macronutrients. So your lipases, your proteases, your amylases. Our kidney function can be worse. And fat-soluble nutrients, those are the ones I did my doctoral work on, vitamin E and the carotenoids, you know, it's a slower uptake of these things. So there are some physiological reasons. But the authors argue that it's actually really driven by age-related disease and not necessarily age itself. This is one of the things I hope you find empowering. So things like, you know, lower stomach acid, atrophic gastritis affects about 20% of older adults, but, you know, lower stomach acid and pepsin leads to low levels of a bunch of different nutrients. And as we see acid blocking medications, if you happen to be on those, we're going to see that those are associated with low levels of a variety of key nutrients. And then we get in low protein intake, low amino acids, we get sarcopenia, which is low muscle mass, which is just what you want to avoid at all costs when it comes to aging, because it's associated with all-cause mortality and all kinds of other chronic conditions. And there's other age-related diseases that increase nutrient demands, things like diabetes, cognitive decline, cancers, and again, sarcopenia. So this is one resource, and to show you a few of them, of common medication classes that deplete nutrients. So I want to draw special attention to, you see H2RAs there, so H2 receptor agonists, and these are acid blocking medications, proton pump inhibitors, PPIs. So these are taken by a bunch of people when they have acid reflux or so on. Look at how many of these nutrients are adversely affected by those. You get diuretics, are, you know, a lot of older people take those. We see how those are associated with a whole bunch of different nutrients. So this is something that, you know, we're trying to teach our medical students more and more about this, but it's largely going to be up to you to do this. And, you know, one of the best resources is mitovin.com. If you haven't heard of this, I strongly suggest checking it out. If you're taking any medications, so omeprazole, there's one of your acid blocking medications, and metformin. So I think this is interesting because it's a common medication, but also one that's used quite often by people who kind of who you know in the sort of anti-aging communities. And it's a, it, you know, can be a pretty good medication. We'll talk about that as we go along. We talk about mTOR and AMPK and these kinds of things, but it does have its issues. One of which is it depletes some, you know, key nutrients for, especially for aging, B12. That's one of the cornerstones that tends to be low with age and where we tend to need a little bit more in folic acid. You see a bunch of other common medications listed on the bottom there. You see antidepressants, stimulants, statins. So it's worth poking around if you're taking any medications or just to know if to advise anyone. And looking specifically at B12, Mitovin will talk about some of the specific studies and grades the evidence based on, you know, what you see here, this matrix of how they grade it, A being a systematic review of meta-analysis human trials down to NA, which is not enough there, or D is kind of, you know, in vivo animal trials, these kinds of things. And these data are generated from a variety of sources. So really nice resource, you know, it blogs on some of key topics. So definitely check out Mitovin if you're interested in that topic. I suggest we all, you know, be aware of it at least. So let's talk a little about the triage theory that I mentioned before. This is Bruce Ames who popularized this. He's a very impressive guy. He's in his kind of maybe mid-90s at this point. Still, you know, doing work. Basically what this is all about is that nutrients are used in this triage manner where the micronutrients are used to ensure survival. Like it's kind of what's the hierarchy of what's most important. That's going to be our survival. And then a bunch of other, you know, important roles that they play go by the wayside. So this would include all of these hallmarks of aging that I mentioned before, you know, our mitochondrial function or DNA repair, telomeres, senescence. And as such, being low in micronutrients can contribute to age-related disease because they're being triaged away from all these important functions they have because we just don't have enough of them around. And I mentioned before that Ames really mentions carnitine and alpha-lipoic acid, especially because of their role in mitochondrial health. So, you know, just being aware that you're getting enough carnitine in your diet and alpha-lipoic acid in your diet to ensure optimal function. Of course, there's many others that you see listed here. Let's move this down a little bit. And you can cover some of those bases with the multivitamin, really, although you ought to be thinking food first, and there's some other supplements we'll talk about too. So what are some of the specific strategies? You know, there have been some efforts such as the Tufts food pyramid that you see here that lists what, you know, they think to be important to for aging. And things like increased fluid intake, absolutely. Increased protein intake, definitely. And they talk about a couple key micronutrients we've already mentioned, B12, calcium, and vitamin D. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. There are many, many other important nutritional factors that we're going to discuss today. You know, other minerals, many other vitamins, the non-essential nutrients, and then just thinking about how nutrition impacts the other domains. You know, the equal amounts of calories of something can have very different effects on inflammation. You know, different protein sources have very different bioavailability. And when we eat, you know, this fascinating science and practice of time-restricted eating can have an impact as well. Okay, so let's look at some of the hallmarks of aging and foods and nutrients that can help with this. So if you look at the primary, these are the, like the furthest upstream hallmarks of aging. So one would be genomic instability. And this is basically an imbalance between DNA damage and repair. So what you're going to want to get in your diet there are dietary antioxidants, probably best obtained through food. You know, things like I showed on that slide with the carotenoids and polyphenols and, you know, alpha-lipoic acid and all these kinds of foods. NRF2 activators, which is a switch that controls a whole bunch of genes. So things like sulforaphane, which is in broccoli sprouts and some supplements, curcumin and turmeric, naringenins, the sirtuin activators. We're going to talk about those plenty as we go along, talk about NAD, and alpha-ketoglutarate, which is a supplement which I feel like isn't talked about a whole lot, but it's one that seems to impact a number of these different pathways. Then you get telomeres, and these are kind of the shoe strings in the end of the shoelaces. I'm sorry, the ends of the shoelaces that can fade as time goes along. So it's the DNA damage at the end of those chromosomes. So things like Mediterranean dietary patterns, there's not one Mediterranean diet, but the general dietary patterns, getting ample fiber, polyphenols, coffee is a great source of polyphenols, vitamin D and omega-3 fats from your cold water fish and other sources. Epigenetic alterations. This is changes in gene expression, epi above genetic genome. It's above the genome. And this is where there's a lot of really interesting things with methyl donors, things like SAMe, trimethylglycine, TMG, it's a great supplement. Choline, talked about before in the egg yolks, B vitamins, omega-3 fats. Then you get HDAC inhibitors, histone deacetylase inhibitors, things like sulforaphane, EGCG, quercetin. We heard a lot about that during COVID, but quercetin, a good supplement also used for seasonal allergies. And once again, alpha-ketoglutarate. Loss of proteostasis, another one. So this is, you may hear about protein misfolding and glycated proteins. So this is where, like HbA1c's, so things like berberine, which can help manage blood sugar, a great, great supplement. We'll talk a little about this when we talk about mTOR. So sulforaphane, again, spices and herbs, things like cinnamon and cloves and so on, and just generally cooking your food on lower temperatures. So slow cookers, crock pots are wonderful, and not burning your food to oblivion. And then we get disabled macroautophagy or autophagy. We hear about that a fair amount today. We talk about things like fasting and so on. This is basically just not able to remove damaged cells or waste. So fasting, time-restricted eating, caloric restriction. I tend to think for most people, time-restricted eating is easier, and I worry about long-term caloric restriction for human beings. But there's the time and place for it. Urolithin A is a really promising supplement. Spermidine is another one, and then the NAD plus precursors. Okay, so let's look at some of the antagonistic factors can go along with these. So deregulated nutrient sensing is a big one. So this is just suboptimal alterations in anabolic response, autophagy, and inflammation, and so on. And one of the best things with this, again, is your spectrum of fasting, time-restricted eating, and caloric restriction, and so on. Potentially ketogenic diets, recommend those. Generally not for the long term. Some people do well with them. Some people need to do them, epileptics, for example. But they can be useful in a cyclic way. Berberine and just getting enough nutrients and not eating too much. I think mitochondrial dysfunction, and this is really a big area of interest these days, which just leads to inflammation and poor cellular function more generally. So things like L-carnitine keeps coming up, coenzyme Q10, DQQ, a ketogenic diet, all these things can help with mitochondrial function. Cellular senescence. These are the senescent cells, or we're often called zombie cells, that go around, basically they're not really alive, but not really dead all the way, but they cause a bunch of inflammation. So there's some interesting flavonoids like fisetin and quercetin that have been used for this. People take them often in a hit and run fashion, they call it. Then once again, you get this timing, your time restricted eating. There's different ways to do it. I think a fair middle ground for a lot of people, something like eating in an 8-hour window. And this will vary based on the menstrual period sometimes for women and other factors. You probably wouldn't want to do a whole lot longer than that with age, but some people really thrive on it, and it's going to be somewhat individual and varies on what you're eating as well. Okay, and lastly, were the integrative ones, which are the ones that are kind of a result of the other factors. So stem cell exhaustion. So just the loss of cellular plasticity. You know, stem cells can kind of become a bunch of different cells. Once again, you know, you get your time restricted eating, you know, fasting and so on, and potential ketogenic diets. Altered intercellular communication, which is just where these cells the signaling pathways aren't working as well. So things like alpha lipoic acid. I mentioned collagen before. You know, again, we think of that for skin and joint health and so on. Glucosamine chondroitin, hyaluronic acid, all those types of things that are working in those systems. Dysbiosis. So, you know, not enough diversity and increasing pathogens. So there are things like fermented foods, probiotics, prebiotics, potentially taking short chain fatty acids, postbiotics, and chronic inflammation, which is kind of like, this is just all these other hallmarks together lead to a state of chronic inflammation, which is associated with seemingly everything when it comes to chronic diseases and worsening of acute diseases. So omega-3 fats, you know, your polyphenols, spices and herbs, and so on. So the authors conclude with some things that resonate with those of us in functional medicine that, you know, we want to avoid age-accelerating environmental factors. So environmental toxins, my team and I have done some work in this area, really try to avoid those. Get good air filtration in your homes. Be careful if you live in environments where there's significant air pollution, stress, physical inactivity, you know, and all these other factors, sometimes which are unavoidable, as they mentioned. And then adopting health-promoting lifestyle factors, exercise, sleeping well, socializing, and of course, diet, which is the focus today. And then they talk about these relatively nonspecific pleiotropic drugs, or not just drugs, these can be supplements, things like NAD plus precursors and, you know, berberine and so on. So really, I think an encouraging paper that there's a lot in aging that we can control. And when it comes to diet, there's a lot of different ways to get there. You know, I think this slide demonstrates some of the ways, which you don't see here. You don't really see any processed foods and ultra processed foods. All right. You see ample protein. You see lots of color. You see carotenoids and, you know, flavonoids abound. And good fats. And again, some form of time-restricted eating. It doesn't need to be extensive, but be a couple hours before bed and maybe a few hours after waking up, those kinds of things. Just don't want to be eating all the time. All right. And that was going to help us sleep, which is fundamental to aging as well. Okay. So let's start with protein, because this is an area where which I think is of paramount importance. Everyone's got different, slightly different takes on this. I think we can all agree on the note. Processed foods or limited ultra processed foods, but let's talk about protein. Why is this so important with age? Well, for one, there's a decrease in total body protein with age, and we kind of all see this in most older folks who have decreased skeletal muscle mass. We kind of see this, but subclinically, it also causes a problem and the organs, in our immune system, and our blood. So protein is essential. We're made up of it. And the decrease in skeletal muscle is really dramatic. So young adults, you know, anywhere around 40-50% of total body weight, around age 70 for most people, doesn't have to be, and that's what's good news, is about half of that. So we know that dietary protein, you know, builds and maintains skeletal muscle. So dietary protein gets broken down to amino acids, which then get built into skeletal muscle. And high quality protein intake is a key to prevent sarcopenia. And, you know, again, we talk about low muscle mass. Study after study after study, you know, systematic reason meta-analyses show that this is a predictor of all-cause mortality. All right. So we talked about the RDAs, some of the shortcomings of them before. The RDA for protein is 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. That's argued by most to be too low. So research suggests at least 1 gram per kilogram of body weight. And many argue for even more. There's been some interesting papers with that. And, you know, it's not just the muscle mass. I mean, there's all kinds of issues with insufficient protein, that you see, listed here. So, you know, things like immune function, wound and fracture healing, skin problems. So we need more. And, you know, a lot of times you hear, well, what about kidneys? There really is no good evidence of renal harm for healthy kidneys. If someone has unhealthy kidneys, it's a different consideration. They may not be able to handle as much. And for other select conditions that are not very common. But I want to talk a little about this. All proteins are not created equally. And there are a number of different sort of measurement scales out there to help us assess the quality of protein. And, you know, typically when we think about protein quality, you know, we think of, you know, just maintaining body protein mass. But there's so much more to it. What are the different amino acids? You know, I talked about collagen before not containing amino acids, and I talked about plant proteins. They don't contain, you know, the full spectrum of essential amino acids. Then, you know, what, you know, the different amino acids and proteins, they have varying effects on our body composition, on our bone health, on the function of our gastrointestinal system, on cell signaling, glucose homeostasis, satiety, you know, also the other nutrients and anti-nutrients that accompany those proteins. So it's, we got to think about this a little bit more broadly. You know, things, anti-nutrients, if you're wondering what those are things like lectins and trypsin inhibitors, which can oxalate, I mentioned before, which can impair, you know, the absorption of minerals and leach minerals and, you know, make we don't digest as well. So we got to think about quantity and quality. And this PDCAAS, which is the Protein Digestibility Corrected Amino Acid Score, is one such way to do that. You see what it's listed, how it's, you know, done there. But in brief, you know, animal proteins are more bioavailable than plant proteins. We see some listing here, you know, things like whey protein isolate, probably at the very top. But we get down to things like wheat and soy, you know, and peanuts and these things, legumes in their whole form are not very bioavailable. So what we need to think about with this, and again, we'll think about combinations and so on, but leucine is one that again, we talk about the amino acids. We really need to think about this. You know, we hear about branching amino acids. These are critical for maintaining muscle mass or putting muscle mass on with age. It's not like it's just a maintenance. You know, you can put on lean body mass with age, which is going to provide, you know, resilience from the hip fractures and all those types of things, but also help you perform better. We see, again, whey protein isolate at the top. And things like wheat protein, which are not very good. Not only that, they, you know, gluten, these are not particularly bioavailable. So things like beans. I mean, beans, you know, can be especially with certain protein powders can be combined with you know, other plant foods to have you know, form complete proteins. But if you look at the amino acids, again, I suggest you think a little bit about more than just grams, but also start to think about amino acids. And there are just many more in something like beef, for example. It doesn't mean you have to eat beef, but you do need to be aware of the amino acids, especially with age. So things to think about here.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that teaser of exclusive content that you get every single month with Dr. Hyman Plus. If you want to listen to the full episode and get access to ad-free podcast episodes, plus Ask Mark Anything episodes, plus monthly functional deep dive episodes, I guess that's why we call it Dr. Hyman Plus, then head on over to the Doctor's Pharmacy on Apple Podcasts and sign up for your 7-day free trial.
Hi, everyone. Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Practitioner database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who's trained, who's a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.